Welcome to the Fashion Law Network podcast series. My name is Kasia Zabrowska-Traubin. I'm a patent attorney and fashion enthusiast based in Los Angeles, California. Join me as I break down legal cases, discuss recent fashion news, and demystify patent law. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Fashion Law Network podcast series. I hope everyone had a great week. And I have a really interesting episode for you guys today, all about shopping malls, featuring a very special guest, the author of one of my favorite books, Meet Me by the Fountain, Alexander Lang. And I love that book title too. It's perfect. So Alexander and I are going to be discussing the shopping mall's history, survival, changes that are happening to shopping malls and trends that are being forecasted. And then, of course, we discuss a legal case, which Alexandra discusses in her book, Amalgamated Food Employees Union versus Logan Valley Plaza, wherein the Supreme Court held that the state courts of Pennsylvania could not enjoin peaceful union picketing by non-employees directly in front of a non-union grocery store in a private shopping mall. I'm also doing a giveaway. The first person to DM me on my Instagram account at patentlawyerla will get a copy of the amazing book. So my guest, Alexandra Lang, is an architecture clinic, and she's the author of four previous books, including The Design of Childhood. Her writing has also appeared in publications like The New Yorker, New York Magazine, New York Times, T Magazine, and City Lab. And she was previously the architecture clinic critic for Curbed. She holds a PhD from the Institute of Fine Arts at New York University, and she taught design criticism there at the School of Visual Arts. She currently lives in Brooklyn, New York. Her book, Meet Me by the Fountain, has received many accolades, including lots of amazing reviews, like the one from the New York Times, which touts the book as a well-researched introduction to the rise and fall and dicey future of an American institution. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the author, Alexandra Lang. Hello, Alexandra, and welcome to the Fashion Law Network podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm so glad you could join us. I'm so excited to talk about your book, Meet Me by the Fountain. And as soon as it came out, I got so many messages from my friends about it because they all know about my love of shopping malls. And then I knew I was really going to love it and your writing style when I read your introduction, where you describe how you read the Jessica and Elizabeth Wakefield Sweet Valley High book series at your local mall, because I used to do the exact same thing at the bookstore at my mall in Canada. Do you still read those books?
I don't read those books. I actually haven't read them in years. I wonder how they've held up. But yes, very formative memories at the mall.
Yes.
And it's funny, actually, mall bookstores, I feel like, are a subset of mall nostalgia, because not only do people miss the mall, but they miss, you know, B. Dalton and Walden Books and I don't know whatever chain there was in Canada.
Yeah, that is, we had Kohl's and Chapters, and I think Chapters was a subsidiary of Barnes & Noble, from what I recall. But yeah, you're right. Now it's just freestanding bookstores.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really nice to have them at the mall.
So can you tell me about your background and kind of what prompted you to write the book?
Sure. I'm a design critic. So in my kind of day-to-day work, I'm writing, you know, essays and reviews of new buildings and new plans for cities. And so I'm really interested in talking about design and architecture for the widest possible audience. So when I've gone to write a book, I really try to figure out, like, what is architecture that everyone has experienced and everyone has an opinion about? And my previous book was called The Design of Childhood. And it talked a lot about design in a lot of aspects of children's lives, but principally playgrounds. So I was kind of thinking, okay, what comes after playgrounds? What's the next place that, you know, people have these formative experiences? And I think that's the mall.
That is true. And your book was so well researched. How did you go about gathering all that information? Did you visit a lot of the malls that you wrote about?
It's funny. I wrote most of my book during COVID. So I had grand plans to visit, all the malls that I talked about. But I started working on it in January 2020. And so I went on one mall visit to Dallas to North Park, which I talk about in chapter two. And then basically everything ground to a halt. So I ended up visiting fewer malls than I expected, but that turned out to be okay because a lot of what I'm talking about is the history of the mall and how the malls used to be. So I ended up getting really into a lot of, YouTube fit footage and historical articles in newspapers and, old architecture magazines that had reviewed the malls when they first came out, and using that to kind of paint a picture of what the mall was like, not now, but, back in 1975 or 1965.
That's interesting. So, what's your favorite mall and why?
I really like North Park, which I just mentioned in Dallas. It was built in 1965, and part of it is still kept up exactly as it was in 1965. So it's this really rare example of a mall that is historically preserved. They've added onto it, so there's a whole new wing, but the new wing mimics a lot of the architectural details of the old wing, which are just very simple and beautiful. So I love this idea that you're literally walking on the concrete floor that they were walking on in 1965. That's also the mall that's featured in True Stories. And so I don't know, there are a lot of movies that you can also, you're walking in the footsteps of David Byrne and other people like that.
Wow. Well, that leads me perfectly into my next question, where I loved all of the mall-centric movies that you reference in the book. My favorite movie, or one of my favorite movies, is Clueless, and I had no idea it was filmed at the Sherman Oaks Fashion Square Mall, which is not too far from where we are here in Santa Monica. So, what is your favorite mall movie?
My favorite mall movie is actually also Clueless. Like, I love Clueless in general. I always say I'm a big Jane Austen fan, but I don't like the book Emma, but I do like the movie Clueless, which is based on Emma. So I love the movie in general, and I think there are a lot of great performances in it. And then I think it just uses the mall really well. The scene I talk about in the book is when Cher and Christian are coming up to the upper level of the mall on the escalator, and it's almost like this royal ascension. Like, they're the king and queen of the mall, and they're coming up on that escalator, and they're perfectly framed by the architecture. And I'm just like, yes, like that is what it's like to be popular at the mall. That's what the architecture is supporting, this beautiful moment.
Exactly. And I felt like it was almost like the mall was a separate character in that movie because it was so centered around even like shopping and the mall too. So that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you made that movie today, there would be a million articles about, like, where did Cher shop? Where can you actually buy these things? Like, you can imagine it kind of all merchandised out.
Yes. And so, do you still like to go to malls? And did writing the book kind of change the way that you look at malls now?
Oh, it definitely changed the way I look at them because now I, kind of try to care categorize them and kind of quickly, like, okay, like, what is the shape of the plan of this mall? What year do I think this mall was built? Like, is this renovated or unrenovated? Like, I have all of these nerdy architecture questions about it. But I do really still like going to the mall. In fact, I'm going to Kansas City for the first time next week, where Country Club Plaza is one of the first shopping centers in the US, like the precursor to the mall. And like the first thing I'm going to do when I get to Kansas City is go to Country Club Plaza.
That's so interesting. I was going to say that I love all the information in the book about the architecture and those layouts of the malls, like that H shape, E shape. And it did make me change the way I think about my favorite malls too, because I think about, oh, I wonder why the layout is like this of this mall. And now I know because I'm reading your book. What type of architecture layout is your favorite for a shopping mall?
I really like the classic I shape plan, which is basically a department store at one end, a department store at the other end, and shops running along both sides. I think that can really be a beautiful plan in a Galleria style mall. I particularly like the Houston Galleria, where there's a skylight running down the whole length of the mall. That one happens to be three stories, and there's an ice skating rink on the lower story. So you just have this like really long view, like going blocks and blocks. And then you look down, and there's all this action on the ground floor of the skaters. And you look, to the mid-level, and you can see people, eating in the food court. It just gives you this really kind of panoptical view that I think is quite beautiful.
What are your thoughts about outdoor malls? We have so many of them, Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a function of climate. I think a lot of the developers that built indoor malls in other places in the country, when they got to California, they were like, you know what? We can save a lot of money if we don't put a roof on it. I really like them. I mean, I think, one of the things I talk a lot about in the book is how social malls are. And I think an outdoor cafe on a sunny day is always going to be nicer than an indoor cafe.
Yeah. And then I've also been reading about how the retail industry is kind of getting divided as inflation is taking its toll. Seems like stores like Walmart, which are more focused on inexpensive items, are really succeeding. And on the other end of the spectrum, luxury brands are also doing quite well. But department stores, which are typically focused on America's middle class, are fading somewhat. So, what impact do you think this will have on shopping malls, especially with those anchoring department stores that seem to be closing, and there may be more closures as some analysts are predicting for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of hollowing out of middle class, like mid-price shopping, is already having a really negative effect on malls. The bankruptcy of a whole bunch of stores, like Kmart, JCPenney, Macy's, has eliminated what were the anchor stores at many malls, and so those malls are now struggling to figure out something else that can go into those quite large spaces. And I think some of the most successful pivots have been to create, enlarged food court, food marketplaces, or to put in entertainment uses like trampoline parks or movie theaters that have, catering, or, movie theaters that also have a VR aspect, or gyms with climbing walls and things like that. So I think for those malls that are really aimed at that kind of like middle class market to continue to succeed, they have to come up with something else that can be a big draw. And that thing is really unlikely to be department stores.
Right. So that kind of brings me to the Mall of America, seventh largest mall in the world. And so they're really known for having this whole entertainment center that you kind of talk about in your book, the roller coaster, things like that. So do you think that this trend will continue?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the Mall of America was ahead of its time in many ways, but definitely switching the focus from shopping to entertainment was ahead of its time. And I think, yeah, already kind of in the sort of post-pandemic era, we're seeing people coming back out for things that they can do in groups that are more fun done in community than at home. And I think that all of those entertainment uses are a good example of that.
Now, let's switch gears a little bit since this is a legal-based podcast series. I would love to discuss the public versus private aspect of a shopping mall with a landmark shopping center-based case that you write about in your book, Amalgamated Food Employees Union v. Logan Valley Plaza, 1968. And this case went all the way to the state Supreme Court. So, just by way of a brief background for anyone not familiar with the case, the facts were, which I pulled from supremejustia.com, there was a shopping center complex owned by Logan Valley Plaza. There was a supermarket there also operated by Weis Markets. And this supermarket was picketed by members of the Amalgamated Food Employees Union. The union members limited their picketing activities to mostly the parcel pickup zone near a covered porch in front of the building and the adjacent area of the parking lot. There was some congestion in the parcel pickup area, but the picketing unfolded largely uneventfully. However, a Pennsylvania state court issued an injunction against picketing and trespassing in this around the Weiss grocery store and the parcel pickup area, as well as the adjacent parking lot. And so this essentially was a blanket prohibition against picketing in the shopping center. The court justified their reasoning on the ground that the injunction was necessary to protect the shopping center property rights, and that the picketing was intended to coerce Weiss Supermarket into allowing its employees to join a union, which was an illegal objective. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court then affirmed the injunction on the sole basis that the picketers were trespassing on private property. They brought an appeal under the First Amendment, and then Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall wrote the majority opinion on this matter. So can you tell us about the holding outcome of this case and any comments you have?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought this up because for me as a non-legal expert, investigating the legal status of the mall was actually one of the most interesting research rabbit holes I went down, and not something that I'd really done before. So the Logan Valley Plaza case is so interesting to me because in the Supreme Court decision about it, which was written by Thurgood Marshall, he says, you know, kind of, we understand that the property rights issues indicate that, like, you wouldn't want picketing on the mall, but in the future, like, it's become increasingly clear that in suburban areas, there is no public space, there is no main street. And so for a group to get the kind of attention that they would have gotten in a public forum in the past, they are going to have to picket at the mall or the shopping center. So it's basically in the public interest, and it's in, you know, First Amendment rights interests to allow public protest at malls. So the Supreme Court basically said way back then that, like, malls should be treated as public space because, you know, Americans need, like, it's our fundamental right to protest. And he's pretty eloquent about this. And I found that, like, the way he wrote about it and the vision that he had about the role that malls and shopping centers were going to play in public life in the US really prescient. Now, I mean, subsequent to that, the Supreme Court has gotten increasingly conservative. And so they have, like, walked back a lot of aspects of that decision and eventually kind of threw the decision making back to the states. So now we have this kind of patchwork legal landscape vis-a-vis protest at the mall, where a handful of states you are allowed to protest at the mall, but at the majority of states you are not.
Yes, and you also do a really good job of explaining all of that in your book, which I enjoyed reading. Now, according to Business of Fashion, there's a new mall, Hudson Yards. I actually visited it for the first time a year ago when I was in New York. Very impressive. It also had the first Neiman Marcus department store, but that has since closed. And according to Business of Fashion, they say that Manhattanites don't have much love for this $25 billion mega project when it opened 5 years ago. Pandemic lockdowns, of course, didn't help. And a constantly shifting mix of stores, restaurants, and experiences are now drawing large numbers of locals and tourists. And I also liked in your book where you pointed out that it is a unique mall and that it doesn't have that food as a magnet layout of a typical horizontal mall. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I went back to Hudson Yards, I guess, over this winter, because I had heard that, you know, sort of tourists were going there. Like, basically, the business had picked back up at it. And what I found was that they have essentially tried to make a food court where the architecture wasn't originally designed to have a food court. Like, the level of the mall that had the most people on it was the one that had a Shake Shack and a bunch of other kind of, like, low to mid price eateries. And they had filled up the hallways around those eateries with tables and chairs, but there wasn't really a central space, you know, or even, like, a nice skylit space with plants, as you find in many food courts at malls, for people to be eating. They were all kind of, like, crammed in around the edges because the design of it really wasn't made for that. So I feel like the designers and developers of Hudson Yards tried to make it a different model of mall. And we're thinking, oh, we're in the city, like we don't need to provide these things that we typically would in a suburban setting, but they turned out to be wrong about that. And now they're doing some, awkward things to try to make it into the mall that people going there like want it to be.
Have you ever been to that edge, the lookout point at the very top of the building?
I have not. I have not. I did go to, there was another kind of Instagram experience thing designed by Snarkitecture. The name is escaping me. That was kind of like, I don't know, a high design ball pit, if you know what I mean. That was there for a while. And I did go to that. And I think that also got a number of tourists. But yeah, I think that people, just want to go over to the west side of Manhattan there and like see the view across the Hudson River. They want to go up to the top of the building and go to the edge. And then they're like, oh, let's check out Hudson Yards. And they get to the first story of it, and it's all these luxury brands. And the day I was there was literally like nobody in any of the luxury brand stores. Like I could see the sales people like looking at their phones, which I'm sure their corporate overlords would not want them to be doing. And then it's like, then I went up a level and there's like Zara and Uniqlo, and there were like plenty of people in there shopping. And then I went up to the third level, and that was where all the food stuff was happening. I was like, oh, okay, like here, this is the place to be in this mall, but it was clearly never designed for that to be the place to be. So I don't know. It's just a very awkward space. It's going to be really difficult for them to renovate in a meaningful way. So I just guess it's just going to be like that for the foreseeable future.
And then another interesting mall that you discuss, which I've also been kind of keeping my eye on, wondering what's going to happen here, is the American Dream Mall. It's in New Jersey, giant mall entertainment center. It opened in October of 2020, so obviously a very bad time to open. And a recent report by Bloomberg.com reported that their annual results are far from their $2 billion annual estimate. Have you ever been there, and what are your thoughts about that mall?
I have been there a couple of times. It's interesting to note the developers of American Dream are the same developers as built the Mall of America and also the West Edmonton Mall in Canada, which is,
The
Canada's largest
Canadian,
mall.
I
Yes.
think, Iranian Canadian developer family.
Exactly. So they did a different thing with American Dream than they did at Mall of America. At Mall of America, there is the theme park in the center of the mall, and then the shopping kind of splits out from it. For American Dream, it's really like a standard issue luxury mall in the middle, and then the anchors are a variety of like entertainment mega complexes. There's a ski hill and a water park are probably the biggest deal ones. And it's interesting, like having done that, I feel like sucks a lot of the life out of the center of the mall because there are a lot of people, especially families, that will just go there for a birthday party at one of those entertainment things and not really walk through the rest of the mall. And you also can't really, see the people like on the ski hill, on the roller coasters when you're in the mall. So it doesn't like that energy doesn't like kind of bounce back. And I think that American Dream has also had a hard time like filling all of its retail slots. Like there's still room for another department store that I don't think will ever materialize, room for a lot more boutiques. So it still has this like slightly bizarre, like, is this really happening feeling there.
And then I know we talked about this in passing before, but what effect did the pandemic have on malls, in your opinion?
I was doing a lot of the reporting for my book during the pandemic, and so I kept calling mall experts and saying, like, what do you think is going to happen? What's happening? Blah, blah. And they all said, like, 2-1, the pandemic is accelerating negative forces on malls, but it's not really changing the trajectory. So I think some malls that were failing failed faster because of the pandemic, but it didn't really change the story. And the story is, a complicated one, but the story is some combination of the kind of income inequality in shopping that we already discussed with the like mid-range department stores going out of business, the rise of online shopping, which went even higher during the pandemic, but has actually gone down so somewhat subsequently. People are going back to bricks and mortar shopping. And the problem of just the overmalling of America, like the US just has more retail square feet per person than any other developed country. And so in some ways, the pandemic is kind of right-sizing the amount of retail that we had. So I think the pandemic kind of didn't make the picture worse, but it emphasized how bad the picture was for, I would say, like B and C class malls that didn't, weren't up to date, didn't have a luxury department store as anchor, and maybe had too much competition in their region.
Right. And do you have any projects that you're working on now? Anything in the works?
I have a book project that I can't really talk about yet.
Okay.
But I write a lot for the website Bloomberg City Lab, and I'm currently working on a series of stories about design for children. One came out last month on a new mental health facility for children in California that has a new kind of more community-based model and is also just a really beautiful building. And I have a story coming out in a couple of weeks about the latest, kind of the latest and greatest swings that we're seeing installed on playgrounds.
Oh, I like that. I'll have to attach a link to that on the episode notes to this podcast recording when it goes live. So thank you for that. And I guess that concludes our discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. Absolutely loved your book. And I'm so happy I got to meet you.
Thanks so much for having me.